Accession number 13358, Mr. H. Wilkinson, Reel 10.
H. Wilkinson, Reel 10. Before going into action, Mr. Wilkinson, did you have a service by the Padre?
More often than not, although I can't recall on this occasion. What had happened, I don't know, whether it's just my memory, but to be honest, I can't recall. He usually had a service before going into a major battle, and one afterwards when he came out. But I can't recall there.
Did the Padre appear on the battlefield?
Oh, I have seen him on the battlefield, but to be honest, I can't say that I saw him after the battle that we've been speaking about. He may have been on some other part of the field, but I can't recall seeing him.
You lost a very high number of men. Looking at them or discovering this over the course of the next few days after battle, did you feel any anger towards those higher ranking officers that were sending you into this situation?
No, I can't say that I ever felt any personal anger against anybody. I was just there to do a job as best I could, and so it went. I remember while we were resting after the particular battle that we've been talking about, that there was a group of Germans taken prisoner. I should think there'd be about four, and this young German officer. He was a fine looking chap, and had been accused of shooting at our medics, and he spoke very good English and completely denied it. And I remember there was a bit of an altercation with him, and he strongly denied it. So much so that he said, if you can prove what you're saying, you can shoot me. And he pulled his shirt wide open and bared his chest, ready to be shot. And I think for a split second it might have been touch and go. I can't quite recall who was most angry at that particular time. Of course, when we heard that they were accused of shooting at our medics, that there was a hint of anger among us all. But he seemed to be so emphatic and strong in his denial that it just seemed to deflate. The situation returned to calmness, and he would be passed on as POWs. They wouldn't be passed on as POWs, but I can't recall much from then, just that they were marched away and that was it.
Did they show any arrogance or behaviour of that nature?
No, they didn't. That particular group didn't, no. And that they were the only actual prisoners that I saw. I suppose there would have been quite a few taken in other areas along the front. But they're the only ones that I came into contact with. And as I say, that's what happened.
What happened to you next?
By the way, there's something else I remember about Primosoli. As we went down this sandy track, and you could see the 88s that had been dug in on the far side. As we approached, on my left, I distinctly remember a half-track vehicle. There was a driver and a chap next to him, and there was three each side in the back. And there weren't bodies. They seemed as though they'd been glued to the metal, and the whole lot had been roasted. There was no rib cages or anything. There was just blackened spinal columns with the German helmet on top, and their leather belts that had been stuck to the spine were charred in the circular position of the body, and the metal buckle was all black. And it seemed really weird. I mean, there was no flesh, stinking flesh about it. It was just the blackened, charred spinal columns with the belts and the helmets on top. So how that had happened, I don't know, but whatever it was, it must have been really fierce fire to do it.
Do scenes like that harden you?
Well, I suppose they do. Because if you weakened, you'd break up altogether. You give them a glance and a thought, and on you go. It doesn't do to dwell too much. You've got to press on and see whatever's happening, and do whatever you have to do. And as I've said so many times before.
Which German weapons did you respect? Or had to respect?
The 88s in particular. They were a grand gun, really. And of course, his Spandau. The number of rounds. The number of rounds they fired, although they weren't as accurate as a Bren gun, they're quite unnerving at times, especially if they're pretty close.
Were there any effective means of defending yourself against these weapons when they opened up on you?
Well, the only way really was to get down, or if there was some cover near at hand, try and get to it.
Were the weapons that you used yourselves of equal value to the Germans?
I don't really know. They would have to find ammunition with it, of course, as we had to, if ever we found any of their weapons. I don't know how they would go about firing.
Did you think that the German weapons were inferior to yours, or greater value to them than the ones that you had yourselves?
No, because it had always been instilled to us how good the Bren was and how accurate it was, which it was a good weapon. Although it was slightly inferior in number of rounds fired. No, I think we're pretty well satisfied. I mean, where ours had accuracy, theirs was more like a spray effect. Yeah.
Did you come across any flamethrowers or weapons of that nature at this stage?
No, I can't remember any flamethrowers. No, I just remember the 88s and the mortar, their mortars, the Flammenwerfers.
What were the mortars like?
Well, they could be a bit unnerving at times. You used to hear them shrieking. It was a different sort of weapon to ours, but you just put your head down a bit and hope that they weren't too close.
Were you pulled into rest after the battle?
Yes, we had two couple of days, maybe three, if I recall rightly. I think it was more towards the water before we set out to go across the plains.
Where did you go to next?
We headed out across the Catania Plain. We got some transport, if I remember rightly. And Etna was forward and on our left. I seem to recall that. And how or where it came from, there was a German aircraft came. And the column stopped and everybody got off the trucks and spread out to the side. Keep me well down, because Jerry was strafing, and we were in Portees at the time, I think. Well, I know that we were, this group that I was with was on a Portee, and they were flying always, and I tried to slide over the side, and somehow my webbing got caught on one of the hooks where they used to put the ropes or whatever to hold the guns. And I was just sort of hung there like something on a Christmas tree. And the bullets were flying about. I said, thanks, chap. And they came back and gave us a lift off.
Were you still with 13 Platoon?
Yes.
Mm. Had you received any promotions at this stage?
No. No, I was a private soldier.
Have you lost any in your platoon in the previous battle?
Yes, yes, we'd lost a few. I can't recall exactly how many, but there's quite a few.
Have you received any drafts before you moved to Catania?
No, I can't recall having received any more drafts other than what we received in the desert to make it up to number to go on to the Sicily invasion. I suppose we would do after that lot, but I just can't recall where and from whence they came.
What do you recall of the Catania action?
Well, after the aircraft had gone away, we got back onto our transport and proceeded towards Catania. I think there was a hiccup where Jerry was defending his airfield. I can't exactly recall how many days it took to clear him, but I believe that our party went through Catania, but more or less on the right of it, just in the outskirts of it. And then from there we went on eventually to the Messina Straits to shove him off into the sea. Well, I remember that I'd been feeling a bit dizzy the day before we went into action there. I remember we all formed up and went forward. And I suppose it must have been quite a few hours. And then all of a sudden I remember nothing more but waking up in a field hospital. I'd gone down with malaria, seemingly. So that was it for me, really, in Sicily.
Where was the hospital?
I can't recall. I just remember waking up in this canvas marquee, and then with one or two more, were sent down to the coast and put on the hospital ship, pardon me, St. David and taken across to North Africa. I recall that when I came to on the hospital ship, I was going to stand up and my trousers fell down. I'd made a belt out of some parachute harness that I'd picked up somewhere en route and plaited it. And I had a silver pocket knife on it, and I also had a small Beretta Italian pistol, and that had been taken. So who got that, I don't know.
What's the treatment for malaria?
Well, it was quinine. Yes, quinine. A lot of fellas used to pull faces. I suppose I did initially, but somehow I seemed to get used to it. And we'd been taking the Mepicrin tablets, of course, but how it came about, I don't know that I'd picked it up.
What do you recall of the journey to North Africa, Mr. Wilkinson?
Well, in actual fact, very little, really, because I was more or less out for the count. All I remember is shortly before having to disembark that I stood up and my trousers fell down. I'd made a belt out of some parachute harness to pass the time away at some time or other, and I'd had a silver filigree knife that an Italian prisoner had given me, more or less out of that bunch that I related to before, where they were bringing Major Parker down the hill on a stretcher, and he was sitting upright. He'd received a bullet above the heart, by all accounts, and I had more or less indicated the Italian prisoners to take this Psalter away with them to follow the stretcher, whereby there'd be an ambulance farther down the track. So when I stood up, that had gone. The silver knife had gone. My belt, my ordinary belt, was on the floor. And I'd also had a little Beretta that had fitted into the palm of your hand that I'd picked up somewhere along the line in Wadi Akrit. That had gone. So I had no time to think about anything else but what I was bundled ashore.
Did base people have a reputation for taking people's belongings?
No, not that I know of. Just somebody must have seen that I was pretty well spark out, didn't know what day or time it was or where I was, and fancied it for themselves. But I can't recall of anything like that happening, and nobody had ever mentioned anything about it. Not even among the chaps that I'd got ashore with when I'd more or less come to, eventually. But I remember being put ashore and in this tentage. Then what time it was after that, I can't recall, actually, whether it was the next day. I rather think it may have been. And we were put aboard a plane and flown over to the other side, just below Algiers, in that area. We're in a camp, is it a GRSTD camp or something? The initials escape me now, actually. I could be right, I could be wrong.
Do you know what the initials stood for?
Something to do with the general retraining and rehabilitation, I think. But anyway, we were there for quite a time, and
how did they treat you there?
Oh, not too badly. We thought it'd be a bit more a bit more discipline than there was actually, but I think they understood the way we were, that there were soft pedaling things. But it was there quite a while. In actual fact, I understood by one or two of the chaps that I don't know whether they were sort of looking after the camp, and some of them had been Geordies, I think. There's a chap that used to work for the same firm as I. He'd just gone somewhere, and we'd moved into his tent. He was a foreman for the same firm, but he was a joiner foreman. And what happened after that?
What was the kind of rehabilitating activities that you did in this camp?
Well, it was more or less roll call and a bit of PT and just a little bit of arms drill now and again, as far as I can remember. It was nothing too tedious.
Were they staffed by second line men or men who had already been through a lot?
Well, I think myself that they were more or less staffed by rear line men. I think maybe the odd chap that had come out of the line and was a little bit past it, or maybe through age or some sort of extended circumstances relating to illness, he could have been kept there. And where was it? We went from there. We moved to I believe I was given a job to build some bases for some huts, and I'm not sure whether it was for a bit of a naffy place, like where they used to have bingo and things like that. I think I'm on the right track there, but I used to have to go and draw, I think it was about 14 Italian POWs, and there was myself and another bricklayer or two that we picked up, and we built these bases for these huts. And it was on the top of a big bank. I used to have to redraw them in the morning, return them with the tools and that at night, signed for us, per usual.
Did they work all right?
Yes, there weren't any bother, really. No, I think they were just pleased to be where they were, really, and out of it, mainly. I remember we hadn't had these places put up very long, and the lines were on a slope, tentage, where quite steep, really, and at the bottom is a bit of a pond or a marsh. Used to be a lot of mosquitoes and that down there. And this particular time, the sky turned like molten gold, and a rush of wind, and then all hell broke loose. It absolutely threw it down. It was a sirocco, and all our buildings and that had gone for a burden. Tentage and goodness knows what. It was in a heck of a state. Anyway, shortly after that, we got moved farther up towards Algiers itself, to a place called Maison Carey Racecourse, and it was more or less all flat. And apart from being assigned to your tentage, it was roll call in the morning, and after that was go as you please sort of thing after lunch. You could go out into Algiers. And there used to be I remember at the entrance to this camp, there was a bar. Well, it was a bar. I can't recall the name of it. Maybe the neighbour smashed up too much for me to read it, because if the Americans weren't in, and there was usually a fight at the end of the day with one or other, and then they moved out, and some of the 51st Highland came in, and it was the same procedure. As the night wore on, bottles and things started to be flung about, but I kept pretty well clear of that. I'd rather take my chances up in town.
Was there a lot of Durrans with you?
Well, actually, there were remnants of the 50 Div that had been picked up, sorted out, and brought this way on account of various illnesses or wounds, etc. And things were pretty cushy for, what, maybe, I'll say around about a month. I could be here and there to a week. And we got detailed for work after that. And it was night shift as well. And we had to go down to the docks at Algiers. And we were unloading stores off ships that had come in, and one darn thing and another. And I wasn't very light, very tall, as you know. And came in and they put us onto this ammunition ship. Well, the flipping shells were nigh on as big as me. And they were Yankee crew, and they saw the way things were. They said, "Come on, Limey, I'll see you all right." Took us on board ship, and I was with one or two of them. Whether they were off-duty chaps from down the boiler house, cooks or what, I don't know, but I had quite a little night. Had a few drinks, and brought me out in time to get the truck home, back to camp anyway. And after that, I was detailed to go on out in just over the Moroccan border. And there was some big ammunition dumps. And I was put into an Isan hut, all covered up with sand and whatever, well ballasted over, back and front, and just a doorway in. And that's what you had to work by, the light that came in the door, and it was full of fuses of various sorts, and I had sorts of them. I thought, oh heck, I hope none goes off round here. Just want no sympathetic detonations there. So,
was the malaria having any still with your health?
Well, yes, it was a little bit, you know, if you weren't 100%, put it like that. It wasn't as drastic as in the first instance, because, I mean, I was going forward in action, and as I say, I'd felt a bit, you know, off colour the previous day, but it had really caught up with me, and down I'd gone, and hence being brought back and eventually to that area.
How does it show itself over a period of time, malaria?
Malaria?
You had it bad and you were flaked out. But
oh, yes.
From then on, how did it show itself?
Oh, you got cold sweats and shakes. You couldn't keep still. You were shivering no matter what they put on you. And they were giving you more quinine, and that was it. You just had to sort of fight it out, as far as I can remember. I always remember when I, shortly after I'd got home and resumed my trade, I was up on the roof of a three-story house, and it took over on me. So I was in a heck of a state, and somehow one of the chaps on the house that I was working, he'd been a plasterer for the same firm, and I think he'd phoned down, and some chaps had come up and put extra catwalks up, and they eventually got me down, and a taxi took me home, and the doctor came, and that was it. And it's rather strange, but for the first few years I kept getting a recurrence, and then after maybe about 5 or 6 years it seemed as though it lessened each time, until it was just more or less a slight shiver and a bit of a headache and a sweat, and an hour or so it was gone. You know, it wasn't lasting anything like the length of time that it used to, until it sort of petered out. I don't think I've been affected at all after the first 20 years. So that's a good long time.
The army doesn't give you a pension for catching malaria?
No, no. Rather the contrary. They seem to think that it's more or less like a self-inflicted wound. You know, you've mistaken your mepocrine or something like that. But in this case, no, I hadn't, because I didn't want malaria. And it's the female of the species that causes it, so to say.
Well, how long were you in Africa?
Now then.